Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Breaking news headline, this just in, the U.S. society has grown so rotten that it lets its own citizens freeze in little tents on the sidewalks all night while billionaires enjoy massive tax breaks on top of their offshore evasions. Here's another headline that you may encounter today. Russia has developed a missile that can reach anywhere in the world. The problem with that headline is that Russia has inherited the USSR's capability, which is more than 50 years old now, and they've always been able to reach anywhere in the world during all this time. President Putin says that his new missile is invincible, which really doesn't matter much since mutual assured destruction, appropriately shortened to the acronym MAD, is still in effect. A nuclear attack from either side will provoke a genocidal response from the air, sea, land, missile, and bomb triad, so nothing has changed. Even if there are weird, scary nuclear cruise missiles and sneaky torpedoes in the mix, it's still a mad waste of money, resources, and potentially all of human civilization. And, of course, as Putin pointed out in his address when he was unveiling the missiles and sneaky torpedoes, it was the U.S. that abrogated the ABM treaty and forced this eventuality. Here's something that's not in the headlines. Don McIntosh of Northwest Labor Press reports that the food chain Burgerville is still continuing to retaliate against union sympathizers by firing them. The boycott continues and has been endorsed by 11 unions and by Oregon House Speaker Tina Kotek. More on Tina in a moment. And as you may have heard on Democracy Now!, ICE has carried out mass immigration roundups in Northern California. Alec Anderson writes in WSWS.org, that's World Socialist website, over the past 3 days, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents have detained over 150 undocumented workers in a massive operation in Northern California. Since Sunday, dozens of ICE agents have conducted broad sweeps of immigrant communities, knocking on doors and arresting those who were unable to produce proper immigration documents. Your papers, please. In some cases, ICE agents reportedly claim to be police officers to induce immigrants to comply with their demands. The agency has claimed that if not for a last-minute warning by the mayor of Oakland, the sweeps would have captured another 800-plus people, representing an unprecedented attack on immigrant workers in the United States. Again, this is an article by Alec Anderson in WSWS.org. WSWS is the Trotskyist website, and it is one of the websites that has been effectively removed from your view by algorithms, by Google, in the attempt to clean up dissent under the ruse of fake news. So again, that website is WSWS.org. This is Alec Anderson's reporting. And continuing with the story, he writes, on Sunday, a group of federal agents waited outside a Circle K convenience store in the town of Atwater until four construction workers came out with their morning coffee. The agents then surrounded the workers and demanded to know whether they had permission to be here. That's a quote. And that's information from Miguel Botello, who's originally from Mexico, and he told that to the Merced Sun Star. One agent seized Botello's wallet, and when he found Botello's green card, laughed and asked if it was fake. After harassing Botello for several minutes, the agents arrested his three co-workers for failing to provide immigration documents. Botello's encounter highlights the indiscriminate nature of immigration roundups in stark contrast to ICE's repeated claims that it only targets criminals. In fact, according to the agency's own statement, only half of those arrested in this latest operation had any prior criminal record. This proportion is far lower than the agency has claimed in past operations, indicating a major intensification of the campaign of mass terror against immigration, against immigrant communities by the Trump administration. Late Saturday evening, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf issued a press release warning that she had received credible information that ICE agents were planning to execute a series of raids to round up undocumented workers in the San Francisco Bay Area, including Oakland. The press release said the information came from multiple sources and that the raids could begin within 24 hours. And speaking for myself, that caution is due to scare tactics that have been used previously by ICE Returning to the article on WSWS.org, in words dripping with xenophobia and contempt for democratic rights, the fascistic acting director of ICE, Thomas Homan, told reporters that, quote, 864 criminal aliens and public safety threats remain at large in the community, and I have to believe that some of them were able to elude us thanks to the mayor's irresponsible decision, end quote. Holman gained notoriety in January by threatening to arrest public officials who refused to cooperate with immigration agents. This follows on the Supreme Court decision rejecting bail and habeas corpus for detainees, something that has gone with a bizarre lack of comment in the U.S. press. Again, that information is at WSWS.org. Now turning to LakotaCountryTimes.com, news from the editor, Brandon Ecoffey, from Pierre, South Dakota. A panel of South Dakota legislators have opted to protect the institutions who oversaw the abuse of Native American people in the state. The state Senate panel rejected a bill aimed at allowing victims of childhood sexual abuse at Native American boarding schools to file lawsuits against organizations like schools and churches. The judiciary committee voted 4-3 Tuesday against the bill. An amendment to the measure would have created a 3-year period for victims to file claims that otherwise would have been barred, and repealed a provision banning victims 40 and older from recovering damages from people or entities other than the abuser. The ban on victims older than 40 has prevented those who are abused at the hands of the boarding schools on reservation and other places across the state from even attempting to seek justice or reparations for their abuse. And Brandon Ecoffey writes, Barbara Charbonneau Darlin is among 9 sisters who unsuccessfully sued over alleged sexual abuse at a boarding school. She says they will, quote, not be silenced, end quote. And again, that's at LakotaCountryTimes.com, and much more to that article. This in from the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, in a statement addressed to Chair Dimbrough and committee members in the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, and talking about the Oregon Senate here. They write, guided by the values and expertise of medicine and public health, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, or PSR, works to protect human life from the gravest threats to health and survival, including environmental pollution. Oregon PSR opposes Senate Bill 1541 because it contains many provisions that negate any possibility that Cleaner Air Oregon, the Department of Environmental Quality, and the Environmental Quality Commission will be able to reduce air toxic emissions and exposures to the population of this state. This bill, they write, would prevent reduction of the adverse health consequences of exposure to air pollutants emitted by industries in Oregon. We strenuously object to the attempt to write specific cancer risk levels and hazard indices into law. The consideration of risk levels should be based on individual chemicals and specific situations based on the best available science. Again, this is from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility in a public statement. They write, we object to the many loopholes written into this bill. Again, that's Senate Bill 1541, to make exceptions for industry that make it possible for industry to continue to put the public's health at risk. We refer here to Section 2.3, subsection A, subsection B, and others with specific requirements written into law so that standards set by the DEQ and the EQC will be constrained and unable to allow public comment and input through normal rulemaking procedures on the specific requirements to be met before industry can be regulated. This is a serious violation of the public trust, they write, and abrogates your responsibilities as legislators for all the people of the state. This bill appears to be written to do the bidding of industry and waste our tax dollars by ignoring the extensive work that has been accomplished through the DEQ and OHA rulemaking already in progress. Again, that's from the Oregon Physicians for Responsibility. Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, that is. And just for your information, the number for House Speaker Tina Kotek is 503-286-0558. I don't know why you might want to have that information, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. House Speaker Tina Kotek, 503-286-0558, 503-286-0558. Just in case you wanted to know, that's House Speaker Tina Kotek, 503-286-0558. Time is 9:13. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland on Periscope live video. Thank you to camera operator Ani, who came in at the last moment because we couldn't get the frame up quite exactly how we wanted it. That's on Periscope. So you can find it on Facebook under Teresa Mitchell, and you can find it on Twitter at KBOO Press Watch, and directly on Periscope if you like, at KBOO Press Watch, using the hashtag KBOO. Now, turning to the ongoing global climate disaster, a few articles, excerpts from articles, I should say. I want to start with OutsideOnline.com, an article by Jay Weston Phippen. Because I want to start off easy, let's talk about the little stuff first. Resorts this year in the Sierra Nevada, Idaho, and Canada have closed early or shut down entirely because of no snow. Others have relied heavily on snowmaking machines, and some resorts have had to rethink how they approach low snow seasons, like in Lake Tahoe, where the Heavenly Mountain Resort says it will blow up and then clear boulders on some runs to make it easier to ski with less snow. I'm not making that up. Because who needs the eternal, well, millions-year-long craggy face of a mountainside when we're talking about ski resort profits? What could go wrong? Quoting, the height of these natural features can require up to 5 feet or more of snow coverage before runs can be opened. During low snow years, a great deal of energy and water resources for snowmaking is required to provide enough snow on these trails so they can be safely opened, end quote. That's according to the resort's master plan. So they're just going to blast the rocks off of the mountain. In 2016, more than 20 million people skied, snowmobiled, or snowboarded. These people added $11.3 billion to the U.S. economy through buying gear, resort tickets, hot chocolate at the lodge, hotel rooms, gas, groceries, restaurant meals, and drinks and bars. In a good season with plenty of snow, that figure can go way up. The logic that drives the number in the report is pretty intuitive. He writes, falling snow is the best marketing for ski resorts. And according to the report, a season with good snow adds $692 million to the U.S. economy and more than 11,800 extra jobs because people visit resorts more often. Low snow seasons have the opposite effect. The study shows that although roughly the same number of people visit resorts each year, regardless of the snow level, they make about 10% fewer trips during low snow. California is the most sensitive to that fluctuation. In a good season, high snow levels could add $175 million to the economy. A poor season, however, cuts $250 million. Again, that's from OutsideOnline.com. It's written by Jay Weston Phippen, and there's much more to the article. So that's the easy stuff. So now I'd like to turn to some of the heavier news about the ongoing global climate disaster. And if you have comments or questions about the ongoing global climate disaster, the number to call is 503-231-8187. From the international news out of Islamabad, even as Europe descends into a deep freeze, the Arctic region is seeing record high temperatures, with the North Pole recently 30 degrees Celsius above normal for this time of year. At the same time, sea ice is covering the smallest area in the dead of winter since records began more than half a century ago. A weather phenomenon called a sudden stratospheric warming has produced North Pole temperatures at or above freezing. In relative terms, that's a 30 degree centigrade, that is 54 degrees Fahrenheit, temperature anomaly. That's a quote from Robert Rode, lead scientist at Berkeley Earth in Washington. According to a tweet that he sent out Monday, there are no permanent sensors at the North Pole, but weather services in the United States and Scandinavian countries reported temperatures peaking on February 25th. Positive temperatures near the North Pole in winter are thought to have occurred during four winters between 1980 and 2010. That's a quote from Robert Graham, a climate scientist at Norwegian Polar Institute. He told that to Agence France-Presse. Further quotes from Robert Graham, they have now occurred in four out of the five out of the last five winters. A growing body of evidence fingers a climate change as one of the drivers of such winter weather anomalies, according to several experts. At the Longyearbyen weather station on the island of Svalbard in the Arctic Ocean, temperatures were 10 degrees centigrade above average over the last 30 days, according to Zach Labe, a climate modeler at the University of California, Irvine. He's quoted saying, Today's mean temperature was 3.9 centigrade. The climate average for the date is minus 16.3. That would be 2 degrees Fahrenheit, according to a tweet he sent out. As for sea ice, January saw record minimum coverage since records began. In one area around Svalbard, the ice extent, 205,000 square kilometers on Monday, was less than half below the average for the period 1981 to 2010, according to the Norway Ice Service. And this disaster at the pole is now extending its fingers across the continents. Charles Firth writes in news.com.au, there could be just 2 years left before the North Pole disappears. That is referring, of course, to the ice at the North Pole, the permanent ice. Over the past few weeks, he writes, the temperature of the North Pole has been 22 degrees hotter than the average temperature for this time of year. Again, that's he's using Celsius. He writes, that's not a typo. It's not 2.2 degrees hotter. It's 22 degrees Celsius hotter. And that would be, actually, the update on that is that it's 30 degrees centigrade hotter, and that would be 50 degrees Fahrenheit hotter. Imagine it being 50 degrees hotter where you're at right now. Returning to the article, the reason it's such a huge difference is that even though night is now falling, the temperature around the poles is still getting hotter rather than colder. That's never happened before. What it means is that the gap between average temperature and this year's temperature is getting wider and wider by the day. There are a lot of implications for this. In salt water, minus 5 degrees, which is the current air temperature in the North Pole, is too warm for ice to form. This means the planet's natural air conditioner and sun reflector is not regrowing back this winter. Two of the ways Earth keeps itself cool have just broken down. This moment has long been theorized, and now it's here. This is the awful moment when the feedback loops start feeding into each other in a big way. The ice caps melt because it's getting warmer. And then because the ice caps have melted, the Earth gets even warmer, even faster. Now, I'm very sorry to report that. Returning to Inside Climate News. There are records like last Wednesday, being the earliest 80-degree day in Washington, D.C. history. And then there are the eye-popping effects of these records. Those records, like seeing people wear T-shirts on the streets of Portland, Maine in February. That's from an article, as I was saying, in Inside Climate News. However you measure it, February 20th through 21st, 2018 were days for the books. Days when the records fell as quickly as the thermometer rose. Days that gave a glimpse into the wacky weather that the new era of climate change brings. Quoting meteorologist Pat Burke of the National Weather Service, what we have is a large-scale pattern that wouldn't be too uncommon in the spring, but it's a little bit unusual to see it set up this way in February and set up with such persistence, end quote. Central Park in New York hit 76 degrees Fahrenheit. Boston had back-to-back 70-degree Fahrenheit days. Towns in Virginia and Vermont were pushing 80 degrees Fahrenheit, with some Vermont towns warning residents that rapid snowmelt from the heat could cause a new round of flooding. In Pittsburgh, a high of 78 degrees Fahrenheit beat a record set in 1891 by a whopping 10 degrees. Skipping ahead in the article, again, this is from InsideClimateNews.org. It used to be said that scientists couldn't say anything about an individual event. This statement is patently false now. That's according to Michael Werner, a senior staff scientist at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. We can say lots about individual events, and we have. Further quoting him, climate change is not a future problem, it's a present-day problem, end quote. Meanwhile, the same Arctic displacement is causing snowstorms and frighteningly low temperatures from Ireland to Italy. Time is 9:22. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. President Trump and Congress are bravely confronting the global climate disaster by ignoring it. And U.S. President Trump has openly threatened North Korea with war if the sanctions do not work. And Marco Meyer writes in Contra Magazine, a German publication, that the world is heading for a nuclear war. And I'd like to quote this article because it's translated from the German. It is my belief that Trump and his followers cannot resist the temptation of a bloody war with North Korea, and so I continue to warn about it. There is controversy in the anti-war community. For example, if you go on to antiwar.com, which is a very useful resource, even though I have problems with it in various ways, they have almost no coverage of North Korea except to say that there shall be no war. I rather doubt this. Turning to the translation, the link is Contramagazin.com. The title is Trump droht North Korea offen mit Krieg. And the translation is, while North Korea is trying to better its position in the South at the Winter Olympics and find a political balance, Washington prefers an escalation strategy, sanctions, war, and annihilation. Excuse me, this is the political slogan that the U.S. has for North Korea. He writes, if the sanctions do not work, we have to start phase two. Phase two will be a very rough affair that could be very, very unfortunate for the world. That's a quote of U.S. President Trump in a joint press conference with the Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. Although he admitted he did not necessarily want to play this card, but quoting the U.S. president, we'll see, end quote. With that, and with the new sanctions on North Korea imposed only on Friday before the end of the games, the U.S. leadership makes it clear that they continue to insist on a dictatorial solution, according to which Pyongyang, in fact, has to bow to U.S. demands unconditionally or to expect a military response. This means that Washington is not afraid to attack North Korea. Particularly problematic is the fact that the Americans have enough weighty voices calling for a, quote, limited military strike, end quote, against North Korea. After all, this could cause the North Korean leadership to actually use nuclear weapons as a defensive measure, especially since the small country otherwise has no chance against the military superiority of the Americans and their allies. However, the German publication writes, there are rumors circulating in the South Korean media that North Korean General Kim Jong-chol may meet with U.S. National Security Representative Alison Hooker at the end of the Winter Games. Both are on site and know each other from talks in 2014. And I include that last sentence just to update it. That dates the article. The meeting did not happen. There was no rapprochement whatsoever. And the general met instead with South Korean President, the general met with a South Korean envoy instead. Turning to the diplomat.com, U.S. Missile Defense Agency makes $9.9 billion fiscal year 2019 budget request, is the headline, citing North Korea and Iran. Ankit Panda wrote this article. It is this is the largest nominal budget request from the Missile Defense Agency ever. The U.S. Missile Defense Agency has requested $9.9 billion in funding for the 2019 fiscal year, citing growing intercontinental range ballistic missile threats from North Korea and theater ballistic missile threats from Iran. The agency's request also points to advances in other areas, including hypersonic glide vehicles, which pose a challenge for existing missile defense systems. And I'm just going to check with the engineer. I believe I was notified. I have a caller. All right. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Hi.
Hello. Hi, you're on the air on KBOO. This is Press Watch.
Yeah, hi. I was going to comment.
Go ahead. Oh, unfortunately, that audio cut out. You want to try that again? Did we drop the line? All right, I believe we have dropped that line. The number to call, 503. Well, I'm not going to give the number, actually. We were almost out of time. So to summarize, the U.S. is asking for a record appropriation for missile defense. As I was saying earlier in the broadcast, missile defense, the abrogation of the treaty is the reason that Russia's Putin has announced his new weaponry, including a nuclear-powered hypersonic cruise missile. When I say nuclear-powered, I really mean that it is a nuclear rocket of the type developed actually in the U.S. in the 50s and 60s. This is an horrific weapon. It doesn't change the balance of power very much, since it doesn't change the fact that retaliation is still possible and inevitable in case of a nuclear strike. But Russia is saying, and Putin was saying, that these are entirely defensive measures. The problem, of course, is that as things escalate, nuclear war can be on a hair trigger. So we are returning to the terrifying conditions of the 1980s under the U.S. idiot president, Ronald Reagan. From the Honolulu Star Advertiser, Fort Shafter, near Honolulu, Hawaii, faces a huge challenge in updating evacuation plans for American civilians in South Korea should war break out on the peninsula. Experts say Asia expert Ralph Casa said estimates of the number of Americans in Seoul in any given day run in the 200,000 to 300,000 range, if not more. Any evacuation would be extremely daunting, he said, and the quote is, likely to cause chaos even if air assets are available, but especially if they are not. Admiral Harry Harris, head of the U.S. Pacific Command on Oahu, revealed at a February 14th House Armed Services Committee hearing that General Robert Brown, commander of the U.S. Army Pacific at Fort Shafter, and his staff had been tasked with creating an updated non-combatant evacuation operations plan, or NEO, for South Korea. And they say that they have problems with it. A pre-strike evacuation plan, quoting CASA, would be a warning to the North and even trigger a preemptive attack by Pyongyang if the North assumed that an attack was imminent. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland.